I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, the baseball playoffs are in full swing, and women's basketball is poised to crown a new champion. But the men, well, their preseason has been canceled. We'll be talking sports in the beauty shop. That's in just a few minutes. But first, we want to take a look at some of the political news dominating the front pages. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie makes it official he will not run for president. This after GOP candidate Texas Governor Rick Perry took another hit over the weekend. The Washington Post published a piece about the controversial name of the hunting camp used by Perry and his family. And as Perry's poll numbers drop, some observers are questioning his viability as a potential general election candidate. Meanwhile, Herman Cain is on the rise. And at the same time, a new study takes a look at how changes in voting laws around the country could have a profound impact on the 2012 elections, particularly for young, minority, and low-income voters. We wanted to make sense of these stories, so we've called upon not one but two former White House staffers. Ron Christie is a Republican. He's a former aide to Vice President Dick Cheney and President George W. Bush. Also with us, Corey Elans. He is a Democrat. He's a senior vice president of the strategic communications firm Vox Global, and he's also the former director of African American media for the Obama administration. Welcome back to both of you. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks a lot, Michelle.
Pleasure to join you.
Good to be here.
Ron, before we get to the political headlines, I wanted to take a closer look at the issue of voting rights, because there was a new report from the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law that examines recent changes to voting laws around the country. These include tighter regulations for voter registration drives, requirements for photo IDs, proof of citizenship at polling places. And the report suggests that some 5 million voters could be affected, which in many states could be kind of the margin that decides, you know, the outcome. And so, Ron, let me just ask you, for the purpose of argument, let's stipulate that there is no evidence, and bipartisan, high-level bipartisan commissions have found that there's no evidence that there's some epidemic of voter fraud, just as there's no epidemic of voter intimidation. So why wouldn't a reasonable person assume that the purpose of this is to keep people from voting who are more likely to vote Democratic?
I just don't accept that on the premise, Michelle. I think that it's important to realize that one of the most important things we have is the integrity of our ballot box. You've seen millions of people cross our borders illegally over the last several years. You've had instances which have actually been documented where ACORN, a former community activist group, was in trouble, frankly, for trying to get people to register for vote illegally. So I don't have any problem whatsoever of having a system in place to ensure that the integrity is kept, which is by presenting a valid ID. And for those who say that it's going to disenfranchise minorities or women or other individuals, I would point out that you have to have an ID to go to the store to pick up a prescription drug or to pick up Claritin, which I take for my allergies. So I just think that the charges on its face that somehow you're trying to disenfranchise voters or to move back to a 60s poll tax is ludicrous.
Let me just clarify on the ACORN piece. I mean, ACORN says they were the group that were defrauded because they had paid people, which was legal in many jurisdictions, to get people to register, and that they were the ones who reported the problem, and that they were the ones who were actually the victims of the fraud. So I just want to clarify that. But Corey, what about Ron Christie's point? If you have to show an ID to get on a plane, you have to show an ID to buy cough syrup or allergy medicine, is it really so onerous to ask people to show an ID to participate in a foundational exercise of our country?
Well, I'll tell you this. The primary issue with this is that it's so painfully transparent where these changes are taking place. They're taking place in battleground states that President Obama won in 2008 and that Democrats are going to need again in order to recapture the presidency in 2012. You're looking at what's happening in Ohio, where they're cutting back on the number of days that you can vote early. You're looking at Florida, where they're taking action similar to this. It really is absolutely despicable when you look at the challenges that we face through this country and the amazing inroads that we've made throughout the civil rights movement and other times to expand the franchise, to expand the opportunity to vote at a time when we have so few people already voting for quite frankly, people right of center to take these actions is just absolutely despicable.
Well, let's stipulate let's just take your perspective and say, okay, let's say it is despicable. Is it really still wrong to ask people to show an ID to vote at a time when, as Ron Christie pointed out, there are many people who are in the country without proper documentation, and it is diluting of the value of the franchise if people vote who are not qualified to do so. So is it really an owner? Are these restrictions really that onerous, even if they're politically motivated?
If you're looking at one right that we have universally as people in this country, as citizens in this country, it is the right to vote. And when you look at the impact that these new issues are going to have on seniors, on youth, on low-income people, it is a travesty what's happening right now in states, key states, battleground states all over the country. And again, that is the travesty, is that this is happening in a way. In other words, they know they can't win on the issues, so they're going to change the rules. And ultimately, that is not what America's all about.
Okay, let's talk about, speaking of battleground states, a new ABC News Washington Post poll finds that only 37% of those polled believe that President Obama will win the election next year. I'll play a short clip of an exchange between President Obama and Good Morning America anchor George Stephanopoulos. That was earlier this week. Here it is.
Are you the underdog now?
Absolutely. Because given the economy, there's no doubt that, whatever happens on your watch, you've got...
You embrace that pretty quickly.
I don't mind. I'm used to being an underdog.
If you're just joining us, by the way, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're speaking with Ron Christie, former aide to Vice President Dick Cheney and President George W. Bush, and Corey Elins, former aide to President Obama. We're having our political chat. We're checking in on the top political news. So, Corey, what does the president have something to gain by saying that he's an underdog? Normally, the president, he's got the big airplane, he's got the big motorcade. He's the guy who comes in chest thumping.
Right.
What's the benefit of saying I'm an underdog?
Well, I got to tell you, you have to appreciate the fact that this president is clear-eyed about the challenges that he's facing ahead. Last cycle in 2008, he was basically running against history as the first serious candidate for president, and he overcame that. This cycle, he's running against the economy. He's running against potentially billion-dollar contributions that can't be traced thanks to rulings that have been made by the Supreme Court. You want to talk about a Coke machine? The Coke machine won't be dispensing Coca-Cola. It's going to be dispensing cash in crazy amounts all over the country.
That's a reference to the Coke brothers. It's a play on words.
Absolutely.
Big Republican
Absolutely.
And funders of conservative causes as
and
well.
And then he's continuing to run against the GOP leadership in the Congress. I mean, just this week, Eric Cantor has said, look, we're not even going to allow the president's jobs bill to see the light of day. And ultimately, that's not what the American people want. They want the president and the Congress to come together. They want them to work together to lead us out of this morass that we're in right now. So, again, the president is very clear-eyed about the challenge that he faces, and that's why you've seen an adjustment in his tone, and that's why he's working diligently, not just for re-election, but to get the country moving again.
Ron, talk about the race on your side of the aisle. What is up with Texas Governor Rick Perry? A month ago... he was the man, and all the headlines were talking about, oh, he's the one to beat, he's the one to beat. Poll numbers dropping, poor debate performance. And then there was this whole issue around this hunting camp that was known by a racial epithet, and I hope you'll excuse me if I don't choose to use it. So how do you, well, let me, when I'm leaving, just ask you, what grade do you give him for how he's handled this?
I give him about a C, and this is why I've been saying for months that I never thought that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie would enter the race. It takes an enormous amount of organization, an enormous amount of money, and frankly, an enormous amount of poise to mount a credible bid to be president of the United States. I think Governor Perry was putting his finger up to the wind and listening to all the cheerleaders and folks telling him he ought to jump in the race. And then all of a sudden, once he got in, he realized it's a lot harder than running for election of governor from a state. So I frankly don't find myself all that surprised by his drop in the polls now that folks have gotten to know him a little bit. And I think that incident with the name of the camp that his family had leased is ridiculous. I know there are those who say, oh, it was years ago, but I'm sorry, if there's a place that has that sort of name, I would think that you might have a little bit more cultural sensitivity to go into a place like that. But very briefly, going back to the president, I only wish that Corey was as clear-eyed as he said President Obama is. Just yesterday, we found that the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, objected to bringing the president's jobs bill up for a vote because they don't have the votes. You had the number two in the Senate, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, saying that the Democrats don't have the vote. So the notion that somehow the Republicans are holding up the president's jobs bill is laughable, given that you have the two top people in the United States Senate, which is run by the Democratic Party, I might add, who won't bring up the president's jobs bill because they don't want it to go down and have the president face a very embarrassing defeat.
Corey, you want to answer that? Because I do want to save 2 minutes to talk about Herman Cain if we could. So do you want to answer that?
Oh, absolutely. Again, where you've seen the main intransigence against this president, I mean, this is a situation where if the president said it's dark and it's dark outside, they would say it's light. And when you look at what's in the legislation that he's put forward, it's all pieces that have been agreed upon by Democrats and Republicans in the past. And it will be paid for. Ron, hold on 1 minute. Ron, I didn't interrupt you. Here's the thing. In 1985, President Ronald Reagan, the patron saint of the Republican Party, campaigned across the country saying that rich people who have benefited from the prosperity of this country deserve or need to pay their fair share because we're just not in a position to continue to support them. Ronald Reagan said this. President Obama is saying the exact same thing right now, and you have Republicans across the country calling it an anathema. So that's just where we are.
Okay. Where we are also is we're almost out of time. So, Ron, give me two words on, or more than two words, on Herman Cain. Rising in the polls, won the Florida straw poll. Is he coming on? Does he have a chance, someone to watch, or really running for vice president? What's your take?
Someone to watch. And again, it's amazing to watch that Corey can't answer the fact that the two top Democrats have blocked the president's jobs bill and not the Republicans. I think it says a lot about the Republican Party that you can have a very attractive, very articulate, very strong businessman seeking his party's nomination, win the Florida straw poll, and surge in the polls. While I don't ultimately believe that he will prevail in winning the party's nomination, given the enormous structure that it takes to have as a major league candidate, I do think he proves that his ideas can win out, his message can win out, and that people are examining him not based on the color of his skin, but the content of his message. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's on somebody's short list.
Okay, well, you know what? We're going to let Corey Elins get the last word next time. Ron Christie's a former aide to Vice President Dick Cheney, later President George W. Bush. He's currently a fellow at Harvard teaching at the Institute of Politics. He was joining us from the studios at Harvard. Corey Elins is a senior vice president of the strategic communications firm Vox Global. He's the former director of African American Media for the Obama administration. He was here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Gentlemen, thank you.
Pleasure to join you both.
Thanks a lot, Michelle.